The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk. I'm Olivia Potts.
And I'm Laura Prendergast.
Today we are delighted to be joined by Greta Bellamancina. Greta is poet, actress and filmmaker. She made her acting debut in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, age 13. Her poetry is acclaimed and her latest collection, Tomorrow's Women, is published today. Greta, welcome to Table Talk.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Greta, we always start at the beginning and you were raised in Camden, London. What was food like when you were growing up?
Well, when I say Camden, it was basically Hampstead. So it's a bit less cool. But growing up, it was just a lot of, I was thinking about this, a lot of porridge oaks. Porridge, flapjack, the whole, I think I just lived off oats.
in every guise.
Yeah, basically. I think, yeah, I'm one of five. So it was kind of, that was probably the easiest
way.
Where
do you fall within the...
I'm the second eldest, so there's my brother Louis, and then me, and then three younger sisters.
So you're the eldest of the girls?
Eldest of the girls, so I'm basically the eldest.
And that's quite a large family. Mm. What was it like being in what was presumably quite a busy household?
It was chaotic. I mean, we grew up in sort of like a very small little cottage in Hampstead, but it was just everyone was on top of everyone and everyone was very independently minded because nobody was going to do anything for anyone else, so it was just like you had to do everything yourself.
And did your parents cook?
They did. It was kind of, yeah, a lot of things, just like batches of things.
Well, with five children, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
like big paellas and big sort of soups. Yeah, lots of big things which lasted long and sort of you had to finish it and then you'd move on to the next. We often, after school, walking down the hill from Hampstead High Street, there's this place, the Crepery. I don't know if you've ever been, but they do the best crepes in the world. And occasionally my mum would be like, oh, I can't be bothered, let's just go there. And there would always be a huge queue. And by the time you got to the end, you'd be so hungry. And we'd be like, please, can we have a sweet one and a savoury one? And you just like eat it on the road at like Orphans and then, you know, go home and it was done. So a lot of the time it was sort of, yeah, quite makeshift.
And when you were at home, were mealtimes structured, sort of big family affairs, or was everyone coming and going?
Actually, it was structured and I just don't know how she did it because I've got two children and I increasingly find it really hard keeping to a certain time frame. Now that I've got two, you kind of have to stick to it, but I still find it tricky. I don't know, because it's such a way of life. But then saying that, at the beginning, I was like, maybe we'll just sort of, yeah, be really piecemeal and just go along with it. But actually, being structured does give you a bit of time to do your other things. So yeah, maybe after all it makes sense. But it was a lot of just how they did it was we would all children have our meal and then afterwards my parents would have theirs sort of like hours later. But it was always, I loved meal time. It always felt that it was just such a, I know, I remember my mother always trying to, she was quite like traditional in her approach to cooking and she would cook like liver and we'd always sort of open the window and just throw it out. Like, this is disgusting. Just catapult it out into the garden.
What about school? Did you have school lunches?
Well, I went to a really nice sort of like primary school where you could, if you had packed lunch, you could sit outside any time, any weather. So that kind of always appealed to me. I loved just being amongst nature and a lot of it was just sandwiches and that sort of stuff just so I could escape the classroom because I genuinely hated sort of sitting around and it was quite a nice escape. But I do remember blagging my way into school dinners when there was donuts because that was just something I was like, this is amazing.
Worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely.
And after school, you went to RADA. Were you living at home at that point, or did you move out?
At that point, I was living with my brother. And so it was kind of, I got into RADA quite young, at 18. And I mean, when I arrived, I didn't realise that there was actually, I mean, everyone was in their 30s and they were all sort of very prepared. And I got there kind of a bit cocky, thinking, this is, you know, I've done it. And actually, it was really, really hard. And my brother at the time was at university at UCL, so he had a flat, and I ended up persuading him to move into his very tiny cupboard room, and I ended up living with him for a bit. It was really fun, but cooking wise I mean, it was always the last thought. I mean, there was just never anything in. I don't know. It was so fun going to RADA because there was just, you know, people from all over the world, and you would just end up rehearsing, and then going to the French House in Soho, and then going off to, and then at like 12 at midnight being like, actually we're really hungry, let's have a pizza. And it was really fun.
Had you learnt to cook before you left home?
Not really. I mean, I could make a sandwich and could slice a piece of cheese, but
the basics.
And to be honest, even when I eventually moved into my own place, I think when I was 21, I moved into a tiny studio flat in central London, and the oven broke, and for about 5 years I didn't have an oven.
There's a lovely acknowledgement in in Tomorrow's Woman to your husband,
yeah,
as the first person to buy me a cooker after years without one.
It really, I mean,
there's a lot in that statement. There's a lot of sentiment imbued into that.
No, yeah, it was, I mean, I honestly lived on cheese and wine, whiskey and bread for about 5 years, yeah, and dinner invites, which was great. But it honestly just didn't occur to me. And I think I had the money, you know, from time to time to buy a new oven, but I think I just put it back into self-publishing my own poetry pamphlets and putting it into sort of bizarre poetry projects, which never made any money back.
And food for the soul.
Yeah, exactly. Food for the soul, exactly.
Your debut was in Harry Potter, is that right? And you were in Slytherin.
I was.
What was it like on set? I mean, what can you tell us about what kind of the food that you're given is like on set, and what that whole setup is?
Well, it was, the food was just, for me, it was incredible, because for about a year I woke up at 5 a.m. and then I got to Marylebone at 6, and then you get on a coach from 6:30, and then you drive to Watford to Leesden Studios, and then you arrive at 7:30, and by that point you're so hungry because you've been up for hours. It's like when you get on a really early flight. So there'd just be huge vats of like baked beans, bacon, sausages, basically a fry up for a year, which was just the dream. And you'd just be so hungry by that point. Yeah, and it was just a fry up every single morning when you got to Leesden Studios. And because I was like 13, 14 at the time, and we'd have all these like on-set jokes that we'd all have HB sauce, which was Harry Potter sauce, of course. You'd be like, pass me the Potter sauce. It was fattening stuff. And then you'd have lunch, and it was an equally amazing catering, because it was just such huge, I mean, there were so many different productions of, you know, on there. There's just, yeah, great catering. And then between every take, there'd be a snack person who'd come around. And it would just, you know, be ongoing. And then on set, it was just phenomenal, the prop departments. I remember there was this huge food scene, and it was just unbelievable what the prop department did. Just like huge gâteaux and cakes.
Was it real food, or was it fake food looking
predominantly
real?
Fake, but then they'd give you like a plate of like a cake and you'd have to eat it, and then they'd be like, right, again for about 30 minutes. It was like that bit in where they're like, Bruce Bogtrotter.
Oh, Matilda, yeah. I was just thinking that.
Sweat and blood went into that, now eat it. So it was a lot of that, which is, I mean, I loved it. I was so eager. I was like, give me more, even though I felt like death.
And was there a time where you made, I mean, did you make friends on set during those meals?
I made so many great friends, and it was so fun, because going back to school, and then, and at this point I was in secondary school, and going back, and what I loved about it was that I went to kind of a school in Camden, and it was quite a liberal school, and we didn't have to wear uniform, and it was kind of, whereas I love the idea of just going to set and putting on this cloak and this tie. And this, I know it sounds really bizarre, but it was just so fun. And I went to an all-girls school and there was boys, and that was also fun. And there was lots of stage school boys who were really sort of glittery and sparkly. And we'd do tap dances in the corridor. And it was just like, wow, you know, it was really fun.
And after RADA, you did an English degree. Mm-hmm. Were you in halls or self-catering during that period?
So I went to halls and I moved out after the first month because I just couldn't.
Was it the food?
I mean, it was a bit bizarre, to be honest. It was like, I was really excited and I always dreamt of just escaping my family and having my own sort of independence. And also at the time, my boyfriend was at Cambridge. So I had this sort of really romantic vision of what halls were going to be like. And the ones in Cambridge just, I don't know, they're really beautiful and lovely houses and blah, blah, blah. Whereas the ones which I got placed in were the ones opposite Guy's Hospital. And I remember arriving on the first day and the guy who showed me into the room was like, oh, this was my room last year. It was bloody awful. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I came in and it was just literally like the smallest, pokiest little room facing sort of like the mental hospital. And there was just like lots of patients standing up there. And then a whole corridor of like 30 people and just, I don't, and then the kitchen at the end, and then just finding my little cupboard space. And I mean, it was fun, but it was just, I don't know, it just wasn't what I sort of hoped for.
It wasn't the same.
And it was really expensive as well. Mm. So it was like, for the price of it, you could just find a really nice place. I remember calling up my dad being like, Dad, come back. Come back. And then just putting everything into bin bags. It was like very quick. It was like, let's get out.
And after university, you then carried on as an actress. What was food like at that point? I mean, was it similar to the sort of Harry Potter experience? Or well, different sets, completely different?
I'll put it this way. So I just acted, but also directed in my first feature film, fiction feature. This one was a very low budget indie film, which we just shot, and it's actually going into cinemas, called Hurt by Paradise. That was very different to those big studio films. We sort of had like a very small catering, which is great, but it was just literally like, you know, a roll in the morning and then a little second roll at night. All the money went on the camera. But up until sort of that point, I mean, it really varies, but I think a lot of it has been sort of, I guess, being in that flat. And then there's lots of, I have so many amazing restaurants, which I have lots of memories in. I don't know if you know, there's a strip of restaurants in Southend Green, and there's an incredible Indian restaurant called Paradise. And it's a restaurant I just continually have gone back to. The family was started by these Indian brothers in the 70s, and we were the only family growing up who would go there. It was always empty, and at one point they were going to close. And then the sons, they had five children as well, and we'd used to play with them. And they also all had like loads of different jobs. Like, you'd see two of them working in like the local Tesco's, one of them working in the corner shop, one of them had a paper round. It was just like, anyway, the sons, what's been so amazing growing up watching how they've sort of, like, family-run business has sort of been taken over, and now it's just like, it's just packed. And every time we walk in now, it's literally like, we're like royalty.
Because you've been there from the start.
I've been there from the start, and it's so nice to see how sort of like big families, they just end up drawing together. And these were kind of the restaurants we would go to, because it was just the places which would let us in, because they were just empty, and they understood that like if something got broken or, you know, the tablecloths got drawn on, they would sort of like let you take it away with you. So it was I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, Paradise sounds great. Sounds
go to Paradise.
Definitely gonna head there.
You inhabit a lot of different roles professionally. Mm-hmm. There's the filmmaking, and some of it fiction, some of it documentary. We've talked about your acting, modelling. Obviously, you are a poet as well. Do you find that the way you eat or the things you want to eat is different depending on what you're working on at the moment?
I feel like because it's so chaotic trying to juggle everything, that I really just enjoy at night dinner time. And I think that's the moment where I can kind of, I don't know, stop and think about everything and talk to Rob, my husband, about ideas and, I don't know, ask him if he thinks that, you know, I'm not doing something completely wrong. So I think dinner time is, I found it much more of a place of solace than ever. And weirdly, I used to be the total opposite. I used to wake up really, really early and go to a cafe. I used to go, there was a Russian cafe in Primrose Hill, which isn't there anymore. And it used to open really early at like 7:30. And I'd be the first person there. And this was like, I've been going there since I was about 15, 16. We went there for about 10 years. And morning time for me was always such a sort of, but then since having children, I think evenings, it just seems to sort of, yeah. So I think mealtime, especially dinner, that place where I can gather my thoughts and when everyone's asleep, hopefully.
Tell us about your poetry. I mean, one of your collections is called Smear, and mm-hmm. it's about sort of self-image and beauty, I think.
Yeah.
There's a poem in there. I mean, tell us about that and how it relates to food.
So that collection is an anthology, and it's a collection which I edited, and it's got about... We're actually just reprinting it with the same publisher, Andrews McMeel. So that, and I think there's about 200 poets from all over the world, all different ages, but all female. And it really is a sort of candid collection of just women talking freely about body, abortion, love, sex, first kiss. It's kind of, we wrote in the book, it sort of says, a book you would... A mother would buy her daughter, but also a daughter would buy her mother. And it's a book I would have loved to have read, I guess, just growing up. And because it really gave me hope reading those poems and them just coming through. We had an open call with New River Press, which is a poetry press that I also run with Robert. But then we had sort of more sort of established poets who are in there too. And just reading some how confessional some things are. And you just really get an insight into the souls of strangers, which is really... reassuring. And yeah, sort of like a bible of motherhood and womanhood almost.
You and your husband Robert work together, you run this poetry press together, and he's written the foreword to Tomorrow's Woman.
Very biasedly.
Well, it is favorable, but I wouldn't say biasedly. It's a lovely foreword. And it really celebrates what you're doing within it, and sort of lets you shine. When it comes to your personal life, do you work together in the kitchen? Is one of you the cook? Do you socialise together? How does it work?
Yeah, I have definitely found cooking now, especially with children, a lot more of a relaxing thing to do. But when it comes to sort of like socialising and dinner parties and stuff like that, Rob is very good at sort of just holding down the fort. I just can't do two things at once. No. I'm like the total opposite. He can just whip up some sort of like amazing Asian curry. And now that we work so much together that a lot of the time, because we have children, we can't leave the house. We'll just be like, come over and we'll do the business meeting at the house. And, you know, and we'll cook for you as well. And it's sort of everything has become... There's no walls anymore. It's all just become like, just everything's a job. But no, I kind of love that at the same time, because it's so refreshing to work with the person you love and to share sort of a creative vision of the world. And when we made Hurt by Paradise, a lot of the time, because I was directing, but also in the film, Robert was on the second monitor and he kind of, you know, was guiding me from the monitor and being like, no, you're like that, we can move on or whatever. And it just made that whole process of collaborating easier. And a lot of the people I really admire, those creative dynamics, people like Gina Rowland and Cassavetti and the way they work, you kind of end up having this silent kind of private language you have between you where you can just look over and you think, okay, this is not working or whatever. So yeah, and food has definitely become a way of, you know, having those creative conversations and bringing in sort of everything into the house more than ever. And also I think there's something kind of lovely about eating food with someone and, you know, discussing an idea, and it immediately breaks away any sort of pretense and you can go straight to the heart of the subject and the art, which is really nice. So actually I think all meetings and all creative beginnings should be around food.
How have you found... Now, your eldest...
We should be eating now.
Yeah, we should be. We're doing it wrong. Your eldest son is 4. How has it been... I mean, obviously well past weaning, but weaning with him and then cooking with him as a... feeding him as a small child. How's that been?
Well... poor Lorca, because he was the first, we sort of, it was an experiment. So he sort of didn't really get that treatment. I mean, now the youngest one is being weaned and having a lovely time. Whereas Lorca sort of just had everything thrown at him. And
just to see what'll stick.
Yeah. And it's so funny because having two, you really just see how different they are. I know it's such a boring cliche, but I mean, Lorca, he's so... I mean, picky, and Lucien just eats everything, and it's such a joy. And I mean, everything is beige with Lorca. I mean, not his personality, but he's just, you know, melon and fish fingers, all these very beige things. Whereas, Lucien just, it's so nice to have somebody who just kind of consumes all. It's just, cause it's so heartbreaking when you spend hours trying to make something and then they just go, nope. And it's just like, oh God,
all that effort.
Give me something. But it's, yeah, it is funny. But I'm trying to think, I guess now food, I feel like having them though has become so much more at the forefront, because obviously you want them to be healthy and you want them to have kind of everything. But for so long for me, I don't know, food had never been such a thing in my life. I just remembered, even when I was thinking back to just... even like revising for exams, I used to go and sit in pubs in the middle of the day because they were such quiet places and I love learning around people. I just love, like, I don't know, like pub food or just like really traditional boring things like that. Whereas now I definitely have become like one of those very boring sort of Ocado users, being like, you must have more kale or whatever.
And you and Robert,
vitamins.
Do you still travel a lot, even with the children? Are there any places that you particularly like to visit or any cuisines that you've discovered?
We go a lot to Paris because Rob has a gallery there, which he works with a lot. And I do a lot of poetry readings at the Shakespeare and Company. Mm. And also we just seem to find ourselves going back there a lot for projects. And there's an incredible restaurant called David's. I don't know if any of you have been, but it's this guy who's run it since the 60s, and you basically go through a curtain. It kind of looks really dingy outside, and then there's pictures everywhere of him with a celebrity, but like everywhere, and it's like him with Woody Allen or him with whoever, Marianne Faithfull. And it's so funny because he's so happy in every photo, and it's just, and as soon as you walk in, he sort of takes a photo of you, and the food's awful. It's Chinese food, and it's always really, really overpriced. But I mean, there's always some. It's just such an amazing vibe. You feel like you've entered something like Midnight in Paris, that film, and there's always some amazing poet or philosopher or somebody there, and everybody, you know, they always do lock-ins and people start dancing together, and you know, suddenly everything's on the house, but then you get the bill at the end of it. Yeah, I mean, that's a magical place. But I just love in general in Paris that you can just go to any sort of bistro and just sitting there and pondering. I love cafe life. I just love writing in cafes. I find it really hard when we go back to Scotland, where Rob's mum lives, and she lives in a tiny little village, but there's just no cafes. And I just don't understand. I just found myself walking around in circles and circles because I find it so hard to stay inside.
Do you write most of your poetry in cafes?
I mean, yeah, sort of anywhere with other people that, where you go and buy your drink, but then you know, whatever, sandwich, coffee, whatever. And then no one talks to you. So in a way, I sort of feel like pubs are great places in the middle of the day to do that. I still think that. But then also, like the Fitzroy Tavern in Fitzrovia is amazing. And it always has a roaring fire and it's always empty in the day. And then, or like, you know, Costa. You know? And I do love that. Whereas I do find it harder if it's like a nice cafe and someone interrupts you every now and then. I find that quite, but I like to be around people because I feel like by osmosis you sort of, yeah, I wish I was one of those people who could lock themselves in a room. And
so you want somewhere busy but anonymous.
Exactly, yeah. I do think that's for me, that's key, because it's such a solitary thing anyway.
And what would be your comfort food?
I love spaghetti. Any kind of spaghetti. I love vongole. I mean, I don't know. I'd never make that, but I would.
That's such a chic comfort, ultimate comfort. Do you know? Time. I think that is a seriously that, elegant comfort.
That and a bellini. I mean, yeah, that would just on tab. Yeah, just, yeah, that. I mean, I mean, this is not comfort food, but room service. Yeah. I mean, I always find it...
That is a comfort food.
That is a comfort food. I always find it really sad when you go to a hotel and for some reason the room service just doesn't exist, or I don't know, or it's not working, or it just doesn't... It comes and out. I was staying... Where was I recently? I was in Baltimore for the Winter Institute, which is this book convention what they do in America every year, where they invite all the independent booksellers to come, and then authors around the world come and present their book, which is really fun and quite bizarre. But it was in this huge Hilton hotel in Baltimore. They had the sort of room service menu, and I was like, great, room service. And then I called out and I was like, I'd like this, and they were like, that will take an hour and a half. It was like an hour and a half. I'll just go down and get it myself. But yeah, that's the ultimate comfort food, if there is any. But that and beans on toast.
Classic.
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 Can't go wrong.
Greta, thank you very much for joining Table Talk. And Greta's new book, Tomorrow's Woman, is out now.
Thank you for joining us on the Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.